Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. One of the most common reoccurring incidents in football is the controversy of a player having a catch. Did he have 1 foot in bounds or 2 feet in bounds? The rules are different between college and the National Football League, and we explore them today with Timothy Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim's got more on this subject in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another edition where we visit with Timothy Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you. And I've got both feet planted, ready to have a heck of a tidbit right now.
Well, share with you. Hopefully they're either both inbounds or maybe you have one on the line.
I don't know. If it's college rules, I only need one in line, one inbounds.
That's true. That's true.
College, or pro, I need two. But and even in college, if somebody pushes me up, or no, in the NFL, if somebody pushes me out while I'm in the air, I don't even have to get my feet done.
Yeah, that's true. True.
So
one of the biggest judgment calls in officiating. This is always one in that you spend a lot of time on mechanics when you have multiple officials covering a sideline when you have 6 and 7 man games. And of course, this is stemming from a tidbit that you wrote recently, Tim, called 1 foot inbounds or two. So what can you tell us about this aspect of football history and the rules?
Yeah. So, it's kind of a funny thing. I think, I don't think people get all up in arms or up in feet nowadays about this rule, meaning the 1 or 2 feet in. I mean, they know it's a judgment call, and typically, probably if there's a question about the official's call, most of the time they've got pretty good video evidence to push it one way or the other. And so I don't think there's a lot of controversial calls about it anymore. The weird thing was, it was just one of those things I'd never really checked into. And so what surprised me was how long it took to get to clarity on what the standard is. What needs to happen for you to be in bounds. So, college, therefore, it was the same thing as the pro rules until, 32. But the first thing I found, this is a little bit of a difficult question to get a straight answer to, just because it kind of doesn't fit exactly in certain rules. Now it does, but early on it was kind of all over the place. But the point is that in the first time that I came across a thing about stepping on or over the sideline, referred to making a fair catch. So there wasn't, you know, there weren't forward passes initially. And so it was just kind of one of those things where everybody knew what inbounds and out of bounds meant, even though it wasn't written down. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those classic things, and a lot of rules worked like that initially, until there's some kind of incident and they say, okay, well, now we got to document which one it is. And so I'm going to mostly talk about the NCAA, at least initially, where, so it was like 1914, they had this fair catch rule, and then, and it may have been there before, but that's the first time that I spotted it. And then they added a similar rule for the end line in 1940. So it's like, but they didn't, in colleges, they never specified this, you know, the foot being on or beyond the sideline. They didn't specify that until 1960, which seems really late. But that's when they did it. And then even then, it was, you know, it was basically, at that point, the rule was, it is also incomplete when a player jumps and catches the pass but lands on or outside a boundary line. So at that point, it was, you know, end lines and sidelines. But it still didn't specify, are we talking 1 foot, 2 feet, you know? And so it was basically, you know, their rule basically was, you're either inbound, if you're not out of bounds, you're inbounds. And you are out of bounds if you have a foot on the boundary line or outside of it, right? Mm-hmm. So apparently, even if you just had 1 foot inbounds, so not on the boundary line, then you're good. But it was one of those things they just didn't specify until the NCAA finally did in 1969. They got very specific. If 1 foot lands in bounds with the other not contact and the receiver has possession, blah, 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 blah. You know, say so they spell it out, you know, quite precisely. Whereas the NFL had gotten to that point back in 1948. You know, so, you know, they had said, you know, kind of, it was similar language, but they also had the thing about the NFL also specified that if you are carried out of bounds by an opposing player, so you're up in the air, they hit you, and you would have landed in bounds had it not been for getting hit and carried out by the opponent, then you're considered in bounds. That's a judgment call, right? College doesn't have that. You have to physically land 1 foot inside the boundary line. And the kind of the funny thing was, and you actually commented on this about the as regard or in the tidbit itself, but the reason the NFL added the issue about having the 2 feet inbounds was they thought it was an easier call for the official. So 2 feet inbounds was an easier call than 1 foot inbounds, which is why they went in that direction. Obviously the NCAA didn't agree on that and still hasn't. And I'm not sure I can make an argument really one way or the other. You're at least a former official, so maybe you have a view on that, but so I don't know. It's just one of those things that just seems like they should have specified that a long time before. and then they took a long time to do it. You know, and I couldn't find any, like, it's not uncommon for them to better specify a rule due to an incident or a couple of incidents. And I never came across references to that. They just kind of one day said, you know what, we really ought to clean this thing up, you know, clean up the spill we have on aisle five. And they finally did it. So.
And just a comment. I think I understand what the NFL is saying. It's easier to officiate because, I mean, sit there and think about it. How many times where receivers so close to the sidelines and maybe he has 1 foot out of bounds, 1 foot inbounds, you know. But so now you almost have to think, okay, did his foot out of bounds hit before when he's touching the ball before the inbounds went? Or if it's simultaneous, what do you have? You're kind of splitting hairs all the time. It makes it more of a judgment call where the 2 feet, you know, it's, you know, clearly inbounds 2 feet, and you take some of that minutia out of it. But as we see, you know, every Sunday and every Saturday in the fall, there's, you know, even with the instant replay, there's plays that are so close that they slow it down to, you know, milliseconds, and you're still wondering, God, is maybe that's a catch. And next second you're saying, no, maybe he's out of bounds. You know, no matter what the rule is, it's amazing how these athletes can do these superhuman things and with their bodies and make calls that close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, baseball's the same way. I was watching some of the College World Series, and there was a call at first, and I was like, he was out. No, he was safe. You know, and the replay, you can see, yeah, it's safe. It was dang close, but the first base ump was right, was correct. But I would have disagreed, you know. So, I mean, so number one, it's just, you know, kind of kudos to all the referees and officials out there. I mean, the other thing, though, that is like back in the time frame that we're talking about, there were fewer officials on the football field, you know.
Right.
So these guys, and, you know, that potentially influenced, you know, the NFL and their decision. But, you know, they probably only had like five. I've got a chart that tells me how many, you know, ref or officials were on the field that, you know, each year. But so they probably had five guys on the field that, you know, that would have the referee, the umpire, linesman, assistant linesman, and then a field judge or somebody somewhere out there. Well, the field judge now, whatever. They would have only had one guy deep. So he, depending on which sideline the pass was on, you know, there could have been an official there, but if it was on the other side, probably not. You know,
yeah,
it could have been a guy 15 yards back. You know,
and since
you're
thinking about it, think about like the Notre Dame squads, like when Rockne was playing, you know, around the World War One era, there was probably only three officials on the field, and these guys were throwing the ball. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah. They would have four by then, but.
But even, I mean, say four, you have no back judge. That means you have two wings, a referee, and an umpire. There's nobody downfield for anything that goes more than 7 yards. It's hard to officiate. You have sideline guys trying to look in.
And think about the guys in 1910 and 11, football had a rule that you couldn't throw a forward pass more than 20 yards downfield. There was no marker out there to designate 20 yards. You had to do it based on the line of scrimmage. You're doing it based on making a decision about eligible receivers, few of whom wore any numbers at all, and none of the numbers they wore made any sense in terms of, you know, tackles are 70s and guards are 60s. None of that system existed.
I will say, though, that 1906 field with the, you know, that era with the grid, that would have made it a lot easier than it is today. Well, maybe not on the grass fields, but, you know, there's more lines to look at. And so it makes your point of reference is a little bit better. But yeah, it's other than that, you're right. And probably a lot of these teams, when they didn't have those gridded fields, I mean, I've gone on fields where every 10th yard is marked. You know, you don't have the 5 yard increments on grass fields at some of these smaller places. Amazing stuff. And it's amazing how the game has evolved and even how we officiate it to this day. We have more men in. We have, you know, technology helping us, where these poor suckers 100 years ago were really just, you know, fodder for the coaches to just, you know, take a whooping on them if they even a judgment call, even if they were right, like you said, you know, earlier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing, like, none of them were trained, you know,
right.
They were out there because they had played the game and they studied the rules and they were considered to be, you know, pretty honorable people.
Yeah.
But they hadn't gone through any kind of formal training. They didn't take quizzes to demonstrate that they knew the rules. It was just like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
But like all the coaches would carry the rules in their pocket just to be able to go, hey, mister,
Right.
know?
Yeah, amazing stuff. Well, great story, Tim. And you do this quite often where you'll take a little piece of football history and bring it to back to life, you know, a century later in some cases. And you do this in your tidbits. Maybe you could share with us where we can find your tidbits and read and enjoy them more.
No, I'm not going to do
No? Okay.
it.
Well, that's a wrap.
It's so it's a Substack site or newsletter. So footballarchaeology.com. Subscribe. You'll get the email every time that I publish a new article. You can also follow me on Substack or on Blue Sky, and because I update both of those every time that something's published.
All right. Well, another evening of fascinating football facts and history, and we really enjoyed it. And Tim, we'd love to talk to you again next Tuesday about another subject.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.